Live from Houston, Texas, the humidity capital of the world, it's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Money for Lunch. I am your host, Bert Martinez, and we have a fantastic show for you today. Hey, on the menu today, we have our latest contributor, Tim Hall. He's a certified public accountant from Austin, Texas. He has over 37 years of comprehensive tax, accounting, and audit experience, including 27 years as a general practitioner specializing in IRS tax problems and resolutions, individual and business tax preparation. I'm excited to have him as a contributor. Tim Hall, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Bert. Great to be here.
Hey, you know what? I'm excited to have you. And I'm excited primarily because, you know, right now, unlike any time that I can remember in history, we have a lot of stuff happening that will be affecting business and as well as individual taxes. Am I right?
Exactly. It's a historic time. For example, Bert, most recently, the Patient Protection and Affordability Care Act, PPACA, it's the historic time. It was the first time government has commanded citizens to purchase a product or service under penalty of law. Of course, they're calling this the shared responsibility payment, which is a tax as defined by the Supreme Court under Article 1, Section 8 of our Constitution. So it is. We do live in interesting times.
Yeah, and so I think that, you know, right now more than ever, people really need to be aware of their options and what to do. You know, specifically, I want to ask you this because, you know, what do you do if you get an IRS letter today? What is your thought on this?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. Number one, don't panic and do call me or call a professional. Many of these letters can be dealt with simply and painlessly. There are a number of reasons why the IRS might send you a notice. Notices may request payment of taxes. They may notify you changes to your account or request additional information. The notice you normally cover a very specific issue about your account or tax return. Each letter and notice offers specific instructions on what you are asked to do to satisfy the inquiry from the IRS. If you receive a correction notice, you should review the correspondence and compare it to with the information on the tax return that the year they're specifying, and that information should be right at the top of the letter. If you agree with the correction to your account, then there's usually no reply necessary unless there's a payment due or the notice directs you otherwise. If you don't agree with the correction the IRS has made, it's important that you respond as requested. You should send a written explanation of why you disagree and include any documents and information you want the IRS to consider. Along with the, at the bottom of the correspondence, there's a little tear-off portion. Send that in. Mail the information to the IRS address shown on the upper part of the letter. And it usually sometimes takes 30 to 60 days for a response. Most of the correspondence can be handled without calling or visiting. But if there's any confusion, I tell my clients to call me. As a matter of fact, I always tell my clients if anything happens, let me know and I'll help them go through it.
Right. You know what? And, you know, I've had my dealings with the IRS, I think,
we all have.
That's right. And for the most part, I think these are good people doing a job, a difficult
exactly.
job. And sometimes they don't understand their own regs, their own rules and regulations. I mean, sometimes they make
Absolutely.
Mistakes, and that's what
yeah.
you know. And that's why I compared it to have somebody like yourself, you know, that you can show, hey, this is what they're talking to me about. And I, you know, just from my experience, I would never ever walk into an IRS agent's office or even start contacting the IRS unless I've reviewed my stuff with a professional. It's just not worth it.
Yeah. You never really want to represent yourself because you tend to bring emotion into it. And you want to avoid that. You want to act professionally, and that's why it's important to engage a professional to help you do this. And normally it can be completed in one day. Sometimes I can call the revenue officer or the IRS agent and deal with it over the phone, mail them what they need. So it's a simple problem, but sometimes you don't want to reveal more than they need to know. And you're right about the IRS. They're great people. They could be you for all the little circumstances change a little bit. So it's important to treat them politely and professionally. And their level of service has really increased and been a lot better over the last, 10 years or so. It's really kind of a new friendly IRS, if that's a possibility.
The new, more loving IRS. Hey.
Yeah.
Hey, let me ask you this. Since we're talking about the IRS and possibly owing money, what if you owe the IRS money and you don't currently have the money to pay it? Should you still file your taxes? What is your experience on this?
Right, exactly. Again, don't panic and give me a call. According to the IRS, approximately 3 out of 4 taxpayers who file a tax return receive a refund. That's the good news for those 75%, but not ideal for the remaining 25% that actually owe money. In fact, it's one of the reasons why some Americans drag their feet and wait until the last minute to get their tax return filed. If you're someone who has or expects that you have a tax liability to pay, it's important to be aware of rules regarding tax payments and to manage your time wisely in advance of that April tax deadline. Perhaps the most important thing to remember, Bert, what I tell my clients is that sometimes, and this still surprises people when I remind them, it's that while you can request a 6-month extension for filing a tax return, you need to pay your taxes by April due date in order to avoid interest and potential penalties. The additional
gotcha.
6 months, yeah, the additional, because a lot of people think, well, I'll just wait and pay the, and I'll be done. But no, they're looking to be paid on April due day. Now, the 6 months may help some taxpayers breathe a sigh of relief, but more often than not, it's better to buckle down and file by the deadline, even if it requires payment. You can always amend your return. There are several ways to make payment for your tax liability, and that's what some people may not know. Number one is those who wish, they can pay it in full. They can send in a check made payable to the United States Treasury, noting your Social Security number, employer identification, tax period, and the tax form. If you want to pay in cash, you can even do that, but you have to go down to the local IRS office to do that. Some people prefer to work out with the IRS to set up an installment plan and pay down their tax debt each month in a predetermined amount on the amount owed. However, there is a one-time fee that the IRS charges for this. At present, it's $60 for a direct debit out of your account and $105 for the non-direct, where you send in your payments every month. And to get that credit, they'll give you a $40 credit after you've made a few payments. Similar to most installment
gotcha.
Payment plans, you will be charged interest on the unpaid amount of the debt as well as potential penalties. You'll always be expected to repay the full debt amount within 72 months. Another option
gotcha.
For paying a tax burden is to pay by a credit or debit card. And IRS has some e-pay service providers that actually do that. But the IRS themselves don't take credit cards, but they have some e-pay providers that will. This can be done via the phone or electronically with these providers, though the customer should be aware that there is a fee charged by these service providers to facilitate the transaction. Remember, keep in mind that you can – file your return any time and wait until April to pay if desired. If you don't make any effort to pay, you could be subject to collection actions, such as having your wages or your bank account or other assets garnished. The bottom line is plan ahead to find out if you owe and then determine the best way to pay Uncle Sam based on your current financial situation. So don't panic if you owe. There are a lot of solutions out there for you.
I love that. Hey, and something that you mentioned that's intriguing to me, you said about amending an IRS return. So if I filed my taxes on time or whatever, I filed my taxes, I owe the IRS money, but then let's say that, you know, I don't know, I decided to go to a professional like yourself and just have you review what I filed, and then you realize that, hey, Bert, you didn't include this credit here, you didn't include this, I don't know, child credit or a solar credit or energy credit, whatever it is I didn't include, then you can go back and refile that amendment and get those credits and actually deduct the amount of money I owe the IRS?
Exactly, yeah. That's called amending your return. That happens all the time. I amend returns all the time. You can go back pretty far to do that. Normally it's like 3 years from the date of file, but there are occasions where you can open that up further. But it's called the form is called a 1040X, and that represents the amended form. And basically, the form itself is less complicated to complete, but to get to the right number, you still have to prepare a revised 1040. But in that 1040X, what you would do is you would describe and document the changes, such as the energy credit or the child care credit, something like that. You would show the 1040 with the explanation and your documentation, and that should deal with it no problem.
Wow. And so you can go back up to 3 years. So literally, you know, there's probably, and I'm just assuming this because it's just a pure numbers game, but there's probably thousands of IRS, there's probably thousands of citizens who are probably entitled to a reduced amount or maybe getting more money back if they simply review their taxes, and they could actually go back 2 or 3 years, amend those returns, and possibly reduce the amount of money they owe or enlarge the amount of money that's owed to them by the IRS.
Exactly, yeah. And establishing a relation with a professional, a CPA, we more than pay for ourselves in the long run. And that's why it's good to work with the professional. Not only do we just crunch the numbers and do the taxes, but we help you create wealth and plan for the future and these life events that come up. So I think it's just as important to establish a relation with a doctor as it is with your CPA. Your financial health and well-being is just as important.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, and you know, I think that one of the things that people overlook that is, you know, we're all good at certain things. Some of us are good at numbers, and that's why you become a CPA or a planner. And some of us are not so good at numbers, and that's why you go to people who are good at crunching those numbers so you can get the full benefit of their expertise. Am I right?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Now, that's a great point. Yeah.
Now let me ask you this, because I know a while back you were named in Texas Monthly as one of Central Texas top wealth managers, and you also brought up the topic of wealth. But I want you to give me your insight as to what's coming up from a wealth building standpoint of view. What's coming up in the 2013, 2012 tax changes that could affect our wealth or our money?
Well, yeah, and it's going to be a dramatic year. With, as I mentioned at the initial of this, that PPAC, the Patient Protection Act, is going to be significant legislation. Number one, I want you guys to review your paycheck for proper withholdings. It's now more important than any time in the past decade to review your paycheck and make proper adjustments, as well as for self-employed individuals, their estimated payments. This is because of the volume of tax changes that are set to hit all of us starting in 2013. Here are some of the changes to consider. Number one, your take-home pay and your estimated pay for self-employed Medicare are going to drop by 2% for the expiration of the temporary cut in Social Security taxes. Number two, the tax rate change. The tax rates will change. The 10% tax bracket is eliminated, and the top rate moves from 35% to 39.6%. Also, no more tax on dividends and capital gains. Your itemized personal exemptions may be phased out during the year. Child tax credits and earned income credits are lower and available to fewer clients. Other changes that impact withholding include participation in employer plan programs and core changes in your marital status and having children and other life events.
Hey, Tim. Tim, I have to cut you off there. I want to say I'm excited to have you here as a regular contributor. The information that you're going to bring, I think, is going to help an enormous amount of our listeners. But unfortunately, we're out of time. But I want to give out your website. It's cpa-austintexas.com. That's cpa-austintexas.com. Tim Hald, not only is he a CPA, but he's also one of Austin, Texas' top wealth managers. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Always a delight.
All righty. Guys, we're moving on. We are rocking and rolling. Our next guest is I'm sorry, somebody just interrupted me and blew my train of thought, just knocked it completely off the track there. Anyway, rocking and rolling. My next guest is Ricky Brava. Ricky Brava, former amateur boxer and Hollywood star, is fighting for Main Street on Wall Street. I just love that. It's great. It's memorable. He's fighting for Main Street on Wall Street, considered a genius in the stress debt industry. Ricky Brava of Apollo Financial Group takes down subperforming bank portfolios and turns them into profit portfolios. Ricky Brava, welcome to the show.
Hi, Bert. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Doing great. Great. It's a pleasure to be on.
All right. So tell me, how did you go from boxer and being in Hollywood? What got you into this field?
Well, I've always been an investor. And I started actually in real estate investing about 6 years ago, and did further research and came across this amazing opportunity, which is investing in distressed debt.
Bert. Gotcha. I gotcha. Sorry for the lag time. I was actually hitting my cough button because I'm still getting over my lingering cough. All right, so how does investing in mortgage notes differ from just regular real estate investing? Tell us about that.
Well, it differs because, like I like to tell people, we're on the other side of the fence of real estate. What you are is you're purchasing debt backed by property, real property. So you become, in essence, the lender, but you're coming in at a discount, which makes it gives you a large margin of profit, which, again, helps you work something out with the homeowner.
Gotcha.
It's a win-win.
So when you take over this underlying debt, you try to work something out with the landowner, and so he stays in his property. You have a performing instrument, and so is that what you mean by a win-win?
Yes. Make great profits
by
keeping American families in their homes. Yeah, that's a win-win in my book.
That is an absolute – that's not only a win-win. That's a win-win-win because they're staying in their home, which is helping the economy as well. It's helping the investor, and it's helping the homeowner. That's a triple win, and I think that's a fantastic idea. Now, hey, Ricky, I got to do this real quick. Speaking of banks, I got to take a quick – commercial break, and then we're going to be right back talking to investor and former Hollywood star Ricky Brava right after this quick commercial break.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Fro and Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase Mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
This is so cool.
You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, it was nice.
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right, guys, we're back. And we're talking about you and your money with former boxer and Hollywood personality Ricky Brava. And what he does is he helps investors find distressed properties and helps the owner stay in those properties. So he turns a non-performing we'd call it real estate note into a performing one. Anyway, let me ask you this. What type of returns are you seeing on a typical deal, Ricky?
On typical deals, annually, we're looking at 18 to 30 plus.
18 to 30 plus. That is
yes.
Outrageous. So I mean, what are you seeing? What's making the big difference here? Versus an 18% return or a 30% return? Is it just the size of the deal or is it the risk of the deal? What's making those numbers change?
Size has a lot to do with it, and capital. The more
capital
you come in with, the higher of a discount you're going to get and higher return rates.
I love it. Okay, so now let me ask you this, because I think this is important. Do you need to be licensed to purchase distressed debt, or can anyone purchase these types of assets?
In most states, you do not need to be licensed. In very few states in the nation, you do. Off the top of my head, I believe Georgia is one of them. But in most states, you do not need to be licensed. If you're an investor, an active investor, this is definitely something you may want to get informed and educated in. Like I said, there's no better feeling as an investor to not only make great profits, but to help American families stay in their homes. And that's what Apollo Financial Group, that's one of our main focuses.
I love that. Now, let me ask you this. What is your usual turnaround time on these types of assets?
It varies state to state. Every state has different laws. But I'm going to say between 6 and 12 months.
All right. That's not too bad. That's not bad at all. Now, I know that recently you were on a panel of experts at the Pitbull Hard Money National Conference in Las Vegas.
I will be there December 1st.
You'll be there.
Yes.
December 1st?
Yes.
Okay. And are you making any other appearances anytime soon?
Yeah. Apollo Financial Group, we actually hold seminars in New York City and Los Angeles. So if you're local to those areas, please look us up. Because we're not only interested in obvious investors, we love educated investors. And so we hold these seminars as one of the tools to educate better people better on the distressed debt business. As well, we're also open to the public at those seminars.
No, I love it. I love it. And,
yeah.
and I'm going to, you know, I love what you do so much. I'd like to give out your website here. It's called ApolloFinancialGRP.com, ApolloFinancialGRP.com. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. And our phone number is 866-825-9350, 866-825-9350.
Ricky Brava, thanks so much for joining us on Money for Lunch, and hope to have you back.
Thank you, Bert. It's been a pleasure.
Absolutely. Guys, an exciting time here on Money for Lunch. We've had some great information about you and your money, not only from a wealth management tax perspective, but also from an investment perspective. And so it's just a lot of fun. It's just, nuggets of fat-free nutritional something as I trail off there. Anyway, moving along. My next guest is Charles Grubel. He's a labor and employment attorney, I believe, and I could be wrong, so I'm going to bring him on. But Chuck Grubel, management, he manages the site of labor and employment lawyer and human resources counselor. So Chuck, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Bert. Thanks for having me.
All right. So did I get it right? Is it Google?
Krugel. Hard K.
Hard K. Krugel. I'm sorry about that. Okay. So you are an attorney?
Yeah, labor and employment lawyer representing companies. Hello?
Sorry, we're having some technical challenges here. We're going to go to a short break, and then while we try to fix this, and we'll have Bert back on the line here shortly. Just
okay.
A moment.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go?
Your car was in an accident. The good news, you're not hurt. The bad news, the insurance company is not treating fairly. Who do you call? Call LibertyPropertyDamage.com. With over 6 million auto accidents per year, insurance companies cut corners wherever possible. LibertyPropertyDamage.com won't let them. If you are being treated unfairly by any insurance company, call LibertyPropertyDamage.com right now. We'll get you everything you deserve. Total loss, diminished value, rental reimbursement. Call LibertyPropertyDamage.com at 832-303-2378.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Guys, we're back. We had a technical hiccup there. We're back with labor and employment attorney Charles Krugel. And let me ask you this. And, you know, what is expected of companies and their attorneys in court before the regulatory agencies when litigating a dispute?
Yeah, typically what happens is that a regulatory agency like the National Labor Relations Board, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, the Department of Labor, one of those types of agencies will file a complaint against a company, and then the company is expected to respond to that complaint. And basically it's similar to a lawsuit. So generally speaking, the company should be honest, their attorney should be honest and open, not be too defensive, not appear as if they're trying to hide anything or trying to shove everything under the rug or not take the complaint seriously. Because these regulatory agencies, ultimately they have a lot of power and authority and it could cost the company a lot of money.
Right, right. So let me ask you this then. Because I think that most people would have like zero experience getting in front of a regulatory board. What's your take on this? Is it always necessary to hire an attorney to handle this kind of dispute?
Actually, no. Sometimes at the first levels, the first or second levels of an investigation, it's not always necessary to have an attorney. I think it depends on how comfortable the company is in representing itself and dealing with the regulatory agency. And sometimes you might be dealing with an investigator who themselves is not comfortable dealing with an attorney and might feel more comfortable dealing with the the company's personnel directly.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. So then let me ask you this, because you mentioned not on the first level. So when should a company consider bringing an attorney in to help with a dispute like this?
Generally when the company feels that it's in over its head, that they're feeling like the investigation is getting away from them, or that a lawsuit's going to be filed against them.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. So what, you know, because, you know, a lot of this, and you tell me if I'm, you know, you tell me your opinion on this, a lot of this really depends on who's on the other side of that table. Because, you know, sometimes you get an individual who's easy to work with, and then you get sometimes you get a guy who's just very crotchety, almost abrasive to work with. And so, you know, would you say that would factor in as far as getting an attorney? Because, I mean, bottom line is, like you said, if you can work with if you're working with the agency, you're probably okay. But if all of a sudden you're dealing with a guy who's a jerk, that might be a good time to bring an attorney. Would you agree?
Bert, it looks like we lost lost Charles there. Oh, just a minute.
Okay.
He's there. He's there. He's on the line. He came back. Just a moment.
Oh, great. Hey, Charles.
Yeah, hi. I know what's
happening. Well, you know, apparently we seem to be having some glitches here. But anyway, so my question was, you know, it really depends on who you're dealing with on the other side of the table. If you're dealing with somebody who's abrasive and hard to deal with, that may be a time to really bring an attorney in to help you with this kind of dispute. Would you agree with that?
Definitely. And you have to realize something with these regulatory agencies. They're people, too. And some of these regulatory agencies, the people, generally speaking, a majority of them are professional, well-behaved. But every so often, you end up with somebody who's obnoxious, who's not that well-trained or maybe not that intelligent, and you have to sort of deal with them for who you assess them to be.
Gotcha. Now, let me ask you this. Do you work exclusively to represent corporations, or do you work with both employees and corporations?
No, I just represent companies, corporations.
Okay.
These
okay.
are small, small to medium-sized businesses.
Okay. All right. Now, let me ask you this. Because I'm intrigued by your answer here, and that is, what should companies do to prevent disputes from escalating into full-blown lawsuits?
Yeah, the key is communication with their employees. The more direct a company deals with its employees, being blunt but not abrasive or crass, I think is really key. When you're being defensive or trying to hide something with your workforce, not paying attention to gossip or not responding to issues as they first arise, that's when a company really encounters problems. Because the longer an issue lingers, the greater the tendency for the issue to get away from the company or to escalate into some sort of full-blown dispute. And as a company, you don't want an issue to escalate to a third party where a third party intervenes because you may end up in a situation where nobody wins or especially you don't win as a company.
Gotcha. And, typically, how much does a company need to spend to resolve a typical dispute like this?
Well, when you're talking at the ground levels, like an investigation or in-house, you're talking maybe hundreds of dollars to a couple thousands of a few thousand dollars. But when you're talking about a lawsuit, you're talking about at least maybe $5,000 or more. And then to settle, and that's maybe even just for attorney's fees, not even for the cost of a settlement.
Gotcha.
And settlement, gotcha. By the way, that can include back pay, damages, things like that.
Okay. All right. Now, let me ask you this. Is there a typical time cycle? I mean, do they typically go for 6 months, 9 months, or does it just depend on the size of the claim?
No, I don't think it really depends on the size of the claim. I think it depends on the caseload of the agency that you're dealing with. So I'd say 6 months is a pretty good average for most complaints with most agencies, whether it's state, federal, local. But it's not unusual for a complaint to last for a few years or just stay out there for a few years. And frankly, and to be honest with you, I've encountered situations where complaints were lost. Literally, the regulatory agency just lost it.
Man, wouldn't that be a nice little gift?
Yeah.
We had a dispute, but I lost it. I don't know what happened to it.
You almost never know that, but sometimes there's been occasion where they've been honest with me about that. So.
That is funny. Okay, so let me ask you this. Since we're talking about lawsuits and settlement, how can a company negotiate the best possible settlement, in a dispute?
Yeah, I think a settlement is just like any other business transaction. And basically, when you're involved in a business transaction, the company has to do its due diligence. So figuring out how much in the actual damages or alleged damages have been occurred here. And sometimes alleged damages is different from actual damages, but you may have to try to figure, come as close as possible to a dollar amount. And remember, you're almost never dealing with exact amounts to the penny. You're kind of estimating things based on maybe salary or expenses, out-of-pocket expenses, medical bills or costs, legal fees or costs, things like that. And that's usually the first step.
Gotcha. Okay. And now let me ask you this, because I know you mentioned that you work with different size companies. Tell us a little bit about your typical client. Who would you say is a good fit for your practice?
These are basically companies with one or more employee or who are dealing with independent contractors or subcontractors. And when I say one or more employee, they could be anywhere from up to a couple thousand employees, which to me is a medium-sized business. They're non-union and unionized businesses both. And they're all different sectors of commerce. So you have trucking and hauling. You have technology, e-commerce type stuff, fast food, construction, telemarketing. There's been all sorts of businesses that my clients are in.
Gotcha. All right. So it's really, there is no typical. It sounds like it's a broad spectrum from A to Z.
Yeah. Generally speaking, when you're dealing with human resources issues, there's a lot of commonality among different industries. Really, when you get into specific and really highly trained or technological industries like nuclear science, medicine, things like that, biophysics, nanotechnology, that's where maybe you come up with a much more regulated sort of industry. Same thing with financial sector, securities, things like that.
I love it. Hey, Charles Krugel.
Krugel,
you can
yeah.
check him out. What's that?
Krugel, hard K.
Krugel, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
hard K. Charles Krugel with a hard K. You can check him out at charleskrugel.com. And he is the guy to go to if your company is having any kind of employment or labor dispute. Charles, thanks so much for stopping by today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Bert. It was great being here.
All righty. Guys, we are rocking and rolling. Our next guest is Tony Rodriguez. And let me tell you a little bit about Tony. I apologize. I was handed it here. Anyway, so Tony Rodriguez Larkin is the owner of Transformation Fitness. Tony earned the distinction of being the best-selling author with his chapter to the Fit Formula. Man, I'm having some tongue issues today. Tony Rodriguez Larkin, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you so much, Barry. I really appreciate that.
All right, so let me ask you this. What is the most widely misused piece of exercise equipment out there?
Well, I'm glad you asked, simply because that's what a majority of my chapter that I wrote about in the Fit Formula was about. And in my research, when I was in graduate school, I did a lot of different tests. With this piece of equipment that's pretty common, called a physio ball or other unstable pieces of equipment that you may see called Dynadiscs or Bosu balls. And I basically said that they've been misused quite a bit simply because of what I've seen in all these commercial gyms and when I just see them misapplied and even workout DVDs and those kind of things. And again, I wrote extensively on it and just gave you provided a lot of different reasons in the research. But the common thing is that if you're training for fat loss, if you're training for muscle strength, if you're just training to look better in general, you're going to serve yourself more just to do the same exercise on the ground because you can apply more force and make it more effective if you're on the ground. It may feel harder when you're on a ball or doing some kind of crazy stuff, where you're kind of shaking a little bit. Although the main thing is that you want to apply a little bit more intensity. So, yeah.
Gotcha. Now let me ask you this, because you mentioned losing weight and putting up. So what are some of the common exercise mistakes people make when looking to lose weight or tone up?
So what I just highlighted was kind of one of them is basically misusing a piece of equipment to get a desired result in terms of toning up or losing weight. The other thing, though, is that, and again, this plagues the common gym, is that these facilities are just, they're littered with a lot of machines you just go and sit down at and just, you just adjust a little weight stack and then go at it. Now, the problem with that is that for most people, even myself included, I'm sitting down a lot throughout the day just taking care of emails, just basically at the computer. So our society is just, we're a sit-down society. But when we go to the gym, we sit down even more on those machines. So that's the issue right there, is that you don't want to be sitting down. The body is really meant to move. And so you want to be I say to most of my clients, stay away from those machines and just move. You know, use the free weights, the dumbbells, the barbells, if you're comfortable with using them, and just get the body moving. And again, you don't even need to use that piece of equipment. You could just use your body weight for a lot of great exercises and get a great workout that way.
Absolutely. Matter of fact, there's what is that program, Insanity, which is a high-intensity workout program I see on TV all the time. It does not use machines or weights. It just uses your own body. And I think people are starting to go to, you know, a lot more towards that type of routine. Because kind of what you said, we're sitting so much nowadays, and what I find interesting, Tony, and see what you think about this, is that, you know, it seems like the more our society sits, A, we're getting fatter, and B, we're having more back problems. I mean, it's getting out of hand because we're sitting so much, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, basically, our body just... I mean, it starts to stiffen in certain positions because it's accustomed to being in those positions while you sit. And, again, that just leads to poor posture. And, of course, problems with lower back is one of the huge, it's not really an illness, but, yeah, it's just an abnormality
right.
That occurs from that.
I mean, exactly what you said. It is an abnormality. I think it's one of the fastest growing areas of our industry, of our society that's constantly having problems. Hey, speaking of having problems, I got to take a quick commercial break, and then we're going to be back talking about you and your health and fitness with Tony Rodriguez Larkin. He's a fitness expert as well as a best-selling author right after this quick commercial break.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler, Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on Geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Hey, guys, we're back. We're talking to fitness expert and best-selling author Tony Rodriguez Larkin about you and your fitness and health. And we're talking about just some basic stuff, the fact that we sit so much as a society. But I want to ask you this because I see this on every friggin' magazine, book cover, anything having to do with fitness, the six-pack is on there just about. There's always something on a magazine about a six-pack this and a six-pack that. I want to ask you as a professional, what's the best way to get a six-pack?
That's kind of a loaded question, but, you know, maybe my answer may not be the best, may not be what most people want to hear. Typically, honestly, in terms of losing out or just cutting down the fat in the belly, it involves diet more than anything else. And with a lot of the reading I've been doing and just kind of seeing certain results in some of my other clients, the main culprit for a lot of the belly fat is wheat. As surprising as that sounds, you know, again, we're kind of inundated with the information in terms of whole grains, you need to get those whole grains, you need to get your whole wheat, all that kind of stuff throughout the day for your fiber, your B vitamins, and so on and so forth. But to be honest, you know, wheat is not what it was 100 years ago. I mean, it's very modified. And then it just spiked higher than quite a lot of other things. For example, white bread has a higher value in terms of spiking up your blood glucose than something like regular table sugar, which most people don't know. And wheat bread is really right up there as well. And so...
Well, you know what? And I want to interject this. I'd like to say this, that you're absolutely right about how we're modifying our wheats and our grain. I mean, if you look at what's happening today in our society, more and more and more people are becoming gluten sensitive. They cannot eat wheat, and they cannot eat gluten. They cannot eat all these things that we could eat just a few years ago, because it's just been modified so much that it's not, like you said, it's not the same wheat or grain that it was even 20 or 25 years ago.
Right. And then, you know, a great book on this is actually called Wheat Belly by Dr. William B. Davis. And, you know, just reading that book will definitely open up your eyes in terms of how wheat is consumed, how it's produced. And he's also, you know, just kind of adding in some great recipes in the back to kind of, you know, typical foods that you may think, like a pizza crust. You know, you always have to make that with wheat. He has a fantastic pizza dough recipe that really does the trick in terms of satisfying that craving. And so I would say, you know, eliminate the wheat. And then the second thing you could do to get that coveted six-pack is just focus on whole body exercises. Whole body exercises with intensity, meaning that, you know, you're just going in there and you're going to get as many reps as possible within 30 seconds kind of thing. So whole body exercises to get the whole body, get the whole metabolism stimulated. And then, you know, when you're home, at work, make sure you're cutting out the wheat.
I love that. I you know, it's something that I think, like, you're right, a lot of people aren't going to want to hear it. You know, as a society, we love our wheat. We love our bread. We hate to cut those things out. Hey, real quick, we're almost out of time, though. With your experience, what do you think is the optimal amount of time to exercise per day or per week?
You know, this one I actually linked with my mentor in terms of establishing a good baseline, and it's basically 5 hours. And I've seen the result with my clients as well. 5 hours is kind of like it's kind of like throughout the week, it's the baseline to hit if you really want to create a body composition change. So whether that's 5 hours split across 3 days or 4 days or even 5 days, that's the key right there. And it doesn't always have to be all at once either. I mean, you could think about exercise in terms of doing a 30-minute walk in the morning. You know, you have to walk the dog, do a little 30-minute walk, which could even be turned into something like an interval, like a walk-jog or a jog-run kind of thing. And then spend 30 minutes, you know, when you're leaving work, 30 minutes at the gym, just getting in, you know, one of those total body full exercise routines that I talked about before. And so 5 hours is pretty much the baseline. And, you know, people will see results too if they don't even hit those 5 hours, which is all right. But if you stay under those 5 hours, that's when you have to focus a little bit more on that nutrition as well. And I know that can be even tougher. So,
absolutely. Hey, all right. Tony Rodriguez Larkin, best-selling author, creator of Transformations Fitness, and you can check him out at transformationfitness.net. He's also a fitness expert. Tony Rodriguez Larkin, thanks for sharing your time with us here on Money for Lunch.
Absolutely, bro. It's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
All righty, guys. Hey, we are rocking and rolling. Today seems like a crazy day. We're having some kind of, I don't know, are there certain sunspots? We're getting a lot of static and interference. It's beyond our control. It is a technical difficulty that sometimes we share with you know, but our people are on it. We're doing the best that we can. But we're moving on, rocking and rolling. Our next guest is David Rose. And David Rose is an IT expert from Brio Solutions, a web and software development company out of Philadelphia, one of my favorite cities in the world. David, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
All right. So let me ask you, what should my website do for me?
That's a very good question. And the truth of the matter is that's different for every person and every business. You know, it really depends on what the goal of your business is. So in some cases, it may be selling a product. In other cases, it may be getting people to call you. you know, but that's, like I said, that's really something that each and every business and person really needs to figure out on their own.
Gotcha. No, you know what, and you're right, because everybody's different, and, you know, you may have a company that has enough employees on board where they can handle incoming phone calls, and maybe you got somebody who's working from home who really wants customers just going to the website so they can reduce the amount of phone calls that they need to interact with. So you're absolutely right. And let me ask you this. I want to talk about this for a little bit, and that is conversions. What are conversions, and why do they matter?
Sure. You know, this is something that's becoming more and more prevalent, you know, as the web becomes more and more interactive. For a long time, you know, people looked at websites as static brochures or business cards. And, you know, they were good for delivering some limited information about your company or about yourself. And that's not really how the web is used today. You know, the web is more interactive. You can get, you know, immediate gratification by finding exactly the right piece of information that you're looking for. You can go and buy pretty much any product, you know, that you want to buy online. So, and again, this really ties back to your first question. A conversion is whatever you decide users on your site should be doing. And so, you know, for Amazon, that means a conversion is buying a product. You know, for a site like Brio, we're like as you mentioned, a web and software company. So what we're looking for is we're looking for people to contact us and tell us about a software project that they want to build or a website that they want to design. So, you know, conversions are very important, and really the conversion is what do you want your site visitors to do once they get to your site?
I love that. And, you know, again, you're right. Again, it's going to be different for everybody else, and a conversion could be filling out a newsletter form or an opt-in form or like you said, it's anybody who calls me off my website, I'm going to click that as a conversion. And I think that's a smart idea. That it goes back to your, you know, to your original answer, and that is, it really depends what you want your website to do, and then, you know, again, that's a personal choice, and so your conversions are going to be radically different.
Exactly.
All right. So here is the big $64 question, or $64,000 question, and that is, why aren't my visitors converting? What's going on?
Sure. And, you know, as many times as we see, you know, people that just don't think about conversions whatsoever, there are a lot of people that do think about conversions, but they sort of only think about the first part of that story. You know, in a lot of cases, the reason that conversions aren't the reason that visitors aren't converting to leads is because there's no way for them to convert to a lead, or that way is maybe obscured. Or they get to your site and they don't really know what to do next. So, you know, one of the biggest things that we see helping is just be very obvious about what you want that visitor to do. You know, we have a client who has a book that he sells on his website. And, you know, a very simple suggestion we made to him, you know, right up front was, hey, you can only buy this book from one page on your site, and it's buried deep within your site. Why not put a little form on every page in your site with a link to buy your book? You know, and he went from seeing one sale every few months to a sale a week. And that was, again, there was nothing that changed in terms of the content of his site. He wasn't doing anything different to drive traffic to his site. He just started asking the customer to buy the book on every page, and that worked.
Right. And you know what, here's the lesson here. First of all, you have to be specific. You have to act. You have, it's what do you call it? That call to action, right? Go here, do this. So that's number one. And then the other lesson I took away from this is, you know, this is your typical advertising, what do you call it, system at work. Advertising, whether it's on a website or on a piece of paper, on the radio or whatever, doesn't work, you know, just because you run the ad one or two times. You have to do it consistently, and you have to do it repeatedly. And that's what you did. You started putting it on every page in his website. That ad is starting to see traction, and people started to pay attention to it. And all of a sudden, you go from making a sale every couple of months to a sale every day or every week. That's huge. I mean, you know, great job. That's just huge. That's a, you know, he must have been very happy with your service.
Yeah, and you know, the funny thing is, I mean, that's probably one of the least expensive you know, items that we tell our clients to do. I mean, it really, you know, it was a very low cost change for him and a very high rate of return.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Hey, speaking of speaking of marketing and advertising, I got to take a quick commercial break. We're going to come back talking to David Rose about you and your website right after this quick commercial break.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on Geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Hey, guys, we're back. We're talking to Dave Rose from Brio Solutions. It's a web and software development company based out of Philly. And we're talking about making your websites work for you, talking about conversions. And he just gave a great story about how he helped one client go from making a few sales every few months to doing sales every week by adding just one little change to that. And so let me ask you this, since we're on the topic of conversions, do you have any tips how people can improve their conversions?
Absolutely. You know, the first and the most important thing is something that you mentioned. It's that call to action. So, you know, every time you know, obviously you have to figure out what you want people to do on your site. So everybody's got to start by figuring out what that conversion is. And, you know, it, like I said, if it's a sale, then ask for that sale. You know, tell the user that you want them to buy your product. You know, if it's a contact form, tell them, hey, fill out a form right now and we'll get back to you right away. Or fill out a form right now and this is the benefit you can realize. So that's the first thing, is just to ask for the sale. The second thing, and this is something that we see all over the place, I mean, we see people spending tons of money on advertising and marketing, pushing traffic to their site, and then the traffic gets to their site, and then nobody knows what to do. You know, the user lands on their homepage, and they're just like any other user. And what that user did was that user clicked on a targeted ad. So, you know, if you put an ad out there saying, buy my widget, and the user gets to your homepage and it's talking about 1,000 other things, you know, that user's confused, and they're most likely going to exit your site. And so what you want to do is you want to have targeted landing pages or targeted messages for the people that are getting to your site. So if a user clicks on buy my widget that as an ad, then when they get to your site, there's a page that says, oh, we see you want to buy one of our widgets. Here are all the options that you can pick from, and here's how you can buy a widget right now. And so that's the second thing, is give a targeted message to the user. And then the third thing is make it extremely easy for the user to do what you want them to do. So again, if it's buying something, allow them to buy it right there. You know, if you want them to fill out a contact form, allow them to fill out the contact form right there. And I think those three things, you know, a majority of businesses would see huge increase in their conversions just by doing those things. And they don't really have anything to do with driving additional traffic to your site. It's really just using the traffic that you have in a better way.
Right. No, I like what you said there. I mean, it's the old KISS principle, right? Keep it simple, stupid, or whatever. You know,
yep.
I mean, you're right. I've seen so many websites where they busted their butt to get me there, and it's got so much crap on that page that I don't have the time to dig through it to find the information that I wanted to. I'm just out of there.
Sure.
All right,
yeah,
we got to go. I apologize, we're out of time, but great information from David Rose from Brio Solutions. If you need help with your website, if you want more conversions, go to briosolutions.com. That's briosolutions.com. Dave, we'll take care of you. Dave, thanks so much for stopping by today.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Absolutely. Guys, spectacular information from Dave Rose, spectacular information from all our guests. We appreciate you here on Money for Lunch. We appreciate you visiting here every day, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.